Lines made it intact and will continue to be practiced in the state of Virginia.
I'm Summer Haston.
You're listening to AUN News
on 1600 WWRL.
Good morning. Here's the latest news. I'm J.J. R. Rainey, WWRL News and WWRL1600.com. New York City police are asking for...
We're talking to W.D. Muhammad.
That's Imam W.D. Muhammad.
I'm just reading from the paper. Okay.
Don't just read from
and
the
paper. And the Imam is the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the founder and original founder of the Nation of Islam. So joining us now is the Imam Muhammad.
Good morning.
Imam, are you with us?
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
So you were in town last week talking about economic self-sufficiency in the African-American community. And in fact, you have stepped down as leader of the American Society of Muslims to head up this organization, the Collective Purchasing Conference. Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
When you took over for your father and you led the Nation of Islam into a more orthodox observance of Islam, at that point you sold off a lot of the businesses that your father had created, a lot of the land that was purchased. Why'd you do that?
It was forced upon us. In fact, my father told us before he passed, he told the staff, the national leaders, that we would have to lose all of our property, all of the assets that we had, because there was what they call commingling of charities with business money from businesses, and charities were used to shore up business, was used to make business look good. It looked like it was working, but it wasn't working the way IRS would accept that it worked.
Government issue.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So there were big problems. There were big financial problems for us, even started about like 8 or 10 years before the passing of my father.
Because it was perceived that you had moved away from his movement to empower folks economically. It's 8:09 in the morning. Yeah. So I'm glad that is cleared up.
I didn't leave it as a plan or as a future plan. I left it because I thought it wouldn't be good for our people, the following, to continue to look to business. I thought they needed to get back to spiritual life first. And I feel now that we have gotten back to our spiritual life and we are ready to go into business again.
Well, are you doing anything in that area to generate either businesses or, like, I think one of the ideas of farmland? Personally, I'm a great...
No, the farmland's not yet. I don't think we're looking at farmland right now. You know, I mentioned slavery. What's been motivating me all along is what my father and my parents put into me, and that was a desire to see the conditions of life in our neighborhoods improve, and to see us African Americans or blacks having a bigger role in determining the future of our neighborhood, and that's business. We have to have some business interest, and we have to ourselves be represented in our own neighborhood as business people. So that's what was motivating me more than anything else. To me, that's a moral obligation. It's not just a business. It's a moral obligation on us as a people. And I believe that the majority of blacks, African-Americans in these neighborhoods, they are depressed and they're lost spiritually because we do not have enough of our leaders working on the material interests for our neighborhoods, for our home life and our neighborhoods.
Imam W.D. Muhammad is our guest this morning. It is 8:12 in the morning. And before we talk about the Collective Purchasing Conference, talking from that side of actually purchasing, let's talk about the flip side. And you said talking about business and giving them economic empowerment. It would seem to me that even before you talk about buying new things, we need to talk about acquiring money in order to be able to buy those things. And what are we doing, what is being done by you and your organization to help black people get jobs and set up businesses?
Yes, what we have, the Collective Conference, is an investment company. You can make a small investment as much as $100 up to $2,000. And the investors are owners offer the partnership. All the investors and with the monies. It's a success. With monies collected from our members, our supporters, we are able to buy land. We're able to operate facilities. We have a meat processing company in Markham, Illinois, where I live here, and southwest of suburbs of Chicago. We have land for building affordable homes, and we're looking at some property now where we will build in another neighborhood where we're going to build for professional people, because we do have professional people. We're not saying that our race haven't made progress. We've made great progress since the civil rights time of the 60s. Since the 60s, we've made a lot of progress. And we made progress even before the 60s. But after the 60s, we've made a lot of progress. We just haven't organized our leadership.
That's where I was going to go.
To address these problems.
212-868-0975 is the number. I know we have a lot of listeners who are or were former members of the Nation of Islam, which you are part of because your father started that organization. And I want to talk to you about leadership and collective working together. We see in other communities that people who don't even like each other may not share the same views. When it comes down to business, they come together. And we see that folks from even opposing sides who share a common religion come together when it comes down to business. Are you working with Louis Farrakhan or Jesse Jackson, or are you working with any of the other so-called black leaders to make this work?
Somewhat, but nothing has really materialized for us. We have an interest in working with members, business persons of the Nation of Islam under Minister Louis Farrakhan. We would like to have some kind of economic ties with them. Business ties. I don't know about business ties. I would say economic ties. We'd like to sit with them and discuss the planning of a better future for us, better material future for us in our neighborhood. I have expressed that over the last several years, and I did get an indication from Minister Farrakhan and one of his top aides that there is an interest, but we have not sat down to actually do anything. That nothing.
What's your relationship with him?
Well, I'll put it this way. I believe in the future of their following. I believe that they will have to do more to represent themselves as Muslims. The religion is not correct yet. They don't have the religion correct. At least it's not in their newspaper. Their newspapers still carry the old language of the nationalist movement that was not so much religion. It was a nationalist movement.
But that was your father's vision, wasn't it?
Ma'am?
Wasn't that your father's vision in many ways?
Yes, it was my father. But my father was constantly changing. My father was a man of change. He kept the same rhetoric because he didn't want to lose his followings. But quietly, he was guiding his leaders, to accept changes in America and accept that the opportunities were better for us and that we should embrace the new realities that we were seeing here and look at white people differently. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was softening his rhetoric quite a bit. At the last couple of years of his life, he told us if the white man can accept us, then we should look at ourselves again and look at the situation again and treat them with respect and take advantage of new opportunities. That was the teaching of Honorable Elijah Muhammad. When Minister Farrakhan took the leadership, he reacted to me. He reacted to my leadership. And what he did was go back. I think he felt he had to go back to the old language. So when he went back, to me, he was really stepping back from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's new position and going back to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's abandoned stand that he took.
I see there are a couple things going on, and I'm not so sure if the acceptance of white America is important to the success of black people, and it might even be a detriment. And perhaps in many ways, Minister Louis Farrakhan understood that. And I'm not so certain if, you know, at the end of the day, even if they accept us, if they're going to give us a place at the table, you know, I'm not sure if they're willing to give up any power to make things equal. 212-868-0975. We do have a caller. Matt in Manhattan wants to talk to you. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Matt. Professor. Good morning, Rabbi. I just wanted to clarify something. I heard both Karen and Rabbi refer to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as the originator of the Nation of Islam. It was my understanding that it was a man named Farad in Detroit in the 30s, a biracial half-white man who gave birth to this religion and then conveniently disappeared and was replaced by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I may be mistaken or ignorant, but could you please correct me on that point?
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Imam?
Yes.
What do you say?
Yes, that's correct. He's correct. He wasn't a half-white man. He was of Asian blood. He was from the area that was, before 1947, there was no Pakistan. He was from the area that became Pakistan, at Lahore, Pakistan. He was an Asian. He looked like a white man, but he was an Asian. To us, you know, all white-skinned people were white people. And some of them feel the same way now. They feel they're white. They're not black. Was he white or black? He was white man, yes. If he's saying white or black, he was a white man.
Okay. And what happened to him?
Yes. But he had a sincere interest in doing something to change the way we think in the black neighborhoods, in our black communities. And he was successful in doing that. He brought about a change. You mentioned the doubt that the white people will accept us at the table. That's the position of many African Americans, you know, majority. But I'm different. I see enough that has happened already to convince me that we are accepted at the table just like anybody else. You know, this is a society that believes in competition. It's much like the competition in the jungle. You know. Survival of the fittest, and I'm prepared to accept what all Americans have to accept, that we have to compete, and nobody is going to just keep taking care of us. That's what all Elijah Muhammad taught us.
We're going to hold you over because I want to know what's next in the Collective Purchasing Conference. Where are you going? Is there some place that people can call and contact you? Hold on one
Success
second.
Success stories
right,
in that area.
We have a couple of callers, and I'm going to put the question out. Is Imam W.D. Muhammad correct? Is it fair? Is there a fair playing ground? Is it a survival of the fittest? Have we moved to that point where white America is accepting black America to the table? You're listening to the hottest morning show in the world. And go ahead, Shia.
The question I
drop in, and they'll be.
You don't have a lot of cash to be able to buy yourself a car.
Oh. Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Mel, are you there?
Yes. Muhammad here.
Yeah, well, we're trying to get to Mel.
No, it's Mike.
Mike, I'm sorry.
Oh, hi.
Hey,
sorry,
Mike.
Good morning.
Who is Mel?
I don't know who Mel is. Okay. He must have left. But
okay, Mike. Mike.
Okay, real quick. I want to ask the gentleman. I remember when the Nation of Islam was coming around real heavy in the 60s and all, and they were saying that Jesus was the white man's God. But what amazes me is that when I see Farrakhan on TV and all, he always quotes Jesus and he always quotes the Bible. You know, and that's always amazed me. And Jesus is in the Quran. So I don't know why they make it like Jesus is the white man's God. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, could I get a response on that, please?
Yes, that was a big problem for me, too, you know. I was seeing the picture of the man we called our Savior, Farad, who gave my father his idea. We were saying that we rejected Jesus. And he was a white man, indicating that God was white. As a child, I had a lot of problem with that. When I learned from my holy book, the book of all Muslims called the Quran, that Jesus Christ was very much like the Bible presents him. We don't believe that he's God, but we believe that he's a spirit and a word from God. And a sign, a great sign, as his mother was, peace be upon both of them. So Muslims all over the world accept Jesus Christ, and we do believe in, I'll use the Christian language, Immaculate Conception, that he was created by God spiritually, he was a great sign,
Okay.
A prophet and messenger of God, and a great sign.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for clearing that up for Mike.
We do believe in Jesus Christ.
Okay, let's go to Ed. In New Jersey. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Ed, 828. Good morning.
Okay, I just have a question. I believe that the downfall of the Nation of Islam was when Malcolm X was assassinated, because I really believe that during that period, Malcolm X, a lot of stuff Malcolm was trying to do, and had he lived, the situation would have been better today. And one, and I'm going to let him respond to that, and then I'll have one last question, then I'll hang up.
Okay.
Imam?
Yes, should I respond now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. I have to put it this way, because I know the time is short. Malcolm and I, we were friends just as far, all the three of us, Malcolm, Farrakhan, myself, we were close, in close association most of the time, and we were friends. More than just workers, co-workers, we were friends. And I had conversations with Malcolm just before he passed, and he went kind of international, which was, that was his business. But when he wanted to involve the United Nations and others in our problem, I thought that that was going away from what we were actually established to do, and I wasn't comfortable with that. So we had political differences. I believe that except for those political differences, Malcolm would have been a big success here if he had not been assassinated.
Do you believe that Farrakhan had something to do with it?
No, I can't say Farrakhan. The Nation of Islam leaders.
Definitely.
Had something to do with it.
Okay. Let's go. Ed, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to move on to Anthony, because I know that Iman has to leave, so I want everyone to get their questions. And Anthony in the Bronx, good morning.
Hello.
Quickly.
Yeah, hello?
Yes, you're on.
Yeah, I'll make this. You know, I miss Malcolm so much. But I would like to ask Iman, is he like his father? Because his father was the one that spread the rhetoric. His father was a pedophile. His father conspired to kill Malcolm X. Is he like that? Does he believe in that?
Have you been listening to the show, Anthony? Have you been... Okay, you don't have to respond. All right, thank you, Anthony. And Iman, you do not have to respond to that, and I know that you have to leave. So let's talk about the collective purchasing conference. When is the next event? Is there an event, and
yes,
where can be reached?
We schedule conferences all around the country, and every year it's looking brighter and brighter. We don't have big cash reserves to make big investments, but the future, financial future, is excellent. It's excellent for us. We are getting some persons that are not Muslim, some Christians, who are interested too, and we welcome them. The meeting we had in Harlem at the church was impressive, and I think we should go back to New York very soon, and that's what they're telling me.
Okay, well, let us know when you will be back, and you got to come in live into the studio, because we have a very hot show.
I would love to do that, Karen.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Is there a website or a telephone number?
Well, you have my telephone number.
Okay, I'm just saying, for the people, if they want to donate or be involved, is there some place that they can call or reach out to you?
Well, the number is, to reach me, would be 7, the area code, 708-798-6750.
Again, please.
708-798-6750.
Excellent. Much success to you, Imam Muhammad, and thank you for coming on this morning. When you come back to New York, you must drop
in. I look forward to being with you in the studio, and thank you for having us on WWR.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
8:32.
Yes, and we got to go to traffic with Candy Roth. Good morning, Candy.
Good morning, Shia. Good morning, Karen.
Hey.
Where are you going to go?
ills and the problems that we're going through, you can trace it back to some behavior that is far from being godly.
And I also think, even just because it's true, sometimes you got to be careful how you use it.
But it was effective.
But when I look at the situation with like the worldwide situation today with the white people, like, because you don't see black people, Indian people, Chinese, or other people of color going into European nations and killing and taking over their land, and like what the Europeans did here to the Indians. You don't see black people or other people of color doing that. It's always the Europeans.
Well, that's why I think the hypocrisy of this war in Iraq is blowing up in our face. That's why I think the chickens are coming home in the roost there, because how in the world are you going to go call somebody a dictator when you haven't cleaned up the mess that you have going on right here? 8:38.
Thank you, Gary.
Have a great day.
Let's go to
Paz. A new caller in Brooklyn. Good morning, Paz. Welcome to the show.
Morning.
Good morning.
I just say shalom to Shia and peace, or salam alaikum to Karen.
Same to you. Peace unto you.
I wish your guest was there, because I would like to clear up some discrepancies, some contradictions that he put out.
Well, he will be back, and you should have called earlier.
First and foremost, I want to let it be known historically. It's an historical fact that he was a hypocrite to his father's movement. In other words, he was one of the conspirators that set up the downfall of the Nation of Islam that his father had established.
He admitted that, and he said in many ways, behind the scenes, his father was undoing all of the things that he had built as well, and changing philosophy.
Sure. I didn't buy into that one.
You didn't buy it?
No.
Right. He's not here to defend himself.
I understand.
So.
No, again, yeah, nor is his father there to defend himself.
No, that's who I'm talking about.
And to verify what I'm saying, there are tapes, there are also books to verify that speaks upon the history of the Nation of Islam.
Okay, so let's say he did undermine his father's movement, and let's say he did dismantle the Nation of Islam. So what?
What I'm saying, we can't just say so what, because you're using him as a spokesman to verify or to justify or to bring an understanding to what his father was about.
No, he's not representing
that at
all.
No, that's not what he's representing yet. He came to just talk about the collective purchasing conference, because he's saying, hey, listen, if we can win, if people within a particular community, in this case the black community, are buying cars, I'll buy 1,000 cars, and then we'll send it out to black people all over the nation, and we'll save a lot of money that way.
I'm saying that, but what I'm saying is, when he tried to explain his reasoning for selling the properties off of the Nation of Islam, those reasonings was a lie.
I'm willing to agree with that, but does that take away from what he's doing now?
No, it doesn't take away from what he's doing now. Exactly what he's trying to do now is trying to turn back to what his father told me.
That's the first thing I asked him. Wasn't it the first thing I said?
No.
Okay.
No, you make a very good point, Paz.
Thank you.
And we agree with that.
8:40, let's move on to Kurt in Harlem.
Good morning, Kurt.
Hello, good morning. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to say I agree with the other caller who just called, okay, because he is a hypocrite. But I also turned into a point. He said that he also believed that the United States government now, accepts us as one.
Yeah,
I want to know at what point did he believe that? I mean, did he believe that when the Nation of Islam was independent of the United States government, when they had their own farmland, when the United States government poisoned the animals that was feeding their cows? The Nation of Islam was independent. The same thing that y'all call in and talk about what we should have. The Nation of Islam had that. Okay, they had their trucking company, their meat packing company. They was feeding their people independent of the white government. And the government sabotaged that. Okay, when they had their own fishing, when they had their own fish out. Okay, they went to China somewhere and got the fish. The United States government stepped in and sabotaged that.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they do that if they try to help up the black people?
Well, he said that America has changed.
Did it change before?
I asked that question, and I put it out to the people, and I'm waiting to hear from people to respond to that, Kurt, like you are.
Another thing, too. Okay, this thing here about the Nation of Islam killed Malcolm X, okay? Black people may have pulled the trigger, all right? But it was the United States government, man, that aided and abetted of the murder of Malcolm X. And I don't care what nobody said. That is well documented.
Even if that's the case, Kurt, if the black man doesn't pull the trigger, Malcolm X is alive today.
First of all, they was following him like crazy. They could have stopped that. They led that.
Okay, but if the black man didn't pull the trigger, Malcolm X would be alive today. I'm not going to sit here and accept that as an excuse, because at the end of the day, it was a black man who pulled that trigger, and if we care so much about each other, that wouldn't have happened. 8:42. Sick of that. Morris in Brooklyn.
Good morning, Morris.
Good morning. How are you? I have a little bone to pick with you, Karen.
Good.
Is it
a chicken bone or a fish bone? Because that gets caught in my throat.
Either one. I'll leave that up to you.
Okay.
Your criticism of the United States going into Iraq and complaining that were there before we fixed things here.
Mm-hmm.
If things are so bad here, why are people, and I say overall, I say generally there's more people of color trying to get into this country than anywhere else.
Morris, let me ask you a question.
Ask me a question.
Were Iraqis complaining about the treatment?
And yes,
were
they were.
I'm asking Morris, not Shia Heck.
Hang
Morris,
on, Shia.
Were Iraqis asking America to come and rescue them from this great dictator?
No, they couldn't, because if they did,
okay,
they were imprisoned.
So that's what they, I feel that they
Morris?
Did.
Stop! Morris.
Yes?
Across the world, would you say that there are dictators that are greater than Saddam Hussein?
As there are.
They're worse, right? There's some in North
there
Korea,
some, yes.
Africa. Why haven't we gone there?
Maybe, first of all, you have to start at a certain point. And
okay,
we started in Iraq, number one. Number two, there's a little strategy behind it. And it seems to be working. By doing what we did in Iraq, it has an influence. Arabs are very easily influenced by what goes on in their region. And by doing what we did in Iraq, I think it'll have an effect on...
Oh, yeah, I see. Saudi Arabia got a suicide bomber yesterday. It is spreading. You're right. They are easily influenced.
Libya is a perfect example.
They're playing us out, Libya. And that's going to come back to haunt us. But let me ask you another question, Mark.
No, but I noticed that it's very interesting, because if we would have gone after Korea, we'd just only be Korea. In this case, being you're actually
touching... The people who said that they had nuclear weapons and wanted to sell them.
Other countries.
Okay, I see.
Besides, Karen, we are dealing with Korea right now.
Oh, we are.
Maybe not militarily, but we are dealing with...
Oh, so there are other ways to handle problems. But let me ask you another question, Mars. When you look at America, you see this is a country that has no problems whatsoever. Everyone has freedoms, and there's no civil rights problems. People aren't being dragged from behind the trucks and until their body parts fall off, or being sent to jail, on death row to die for crimes that they may or may not have committed. I just look at it. It's hypocrisy to go in and rescue somebody because
be
of
like
civil rights
thing.
Issues and not deal with the ones that you're dealing with every
that
day.
That would
here.
Make it much sense, like to say to every politician.
It's not a perfect place, but it's the best place around.
And I couldn't agree with you more, but we still got a lot
of course, is there
to
work
clean
to do?
Up.
No question about it. There's certainly work to do.
I'm just uncomfortable with us going and telling people how to live when we're not doing
a
good...
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, you can.
How did you feel about us not going to help the people in Rwanda?
I feel the same way about us not helping the people in Liberia, not helping the people in Haiti, not helping the
but
people...
But it was wrong, wasn't it?
It was dead wrong. But that's my point.
But even though it's not perfect here, you want us to go help people in Rwanda?
Those people were asking for us to help them. A million people died over... I mean, that was a holocaust on a level that we can't... We've supplied Saddam Hussein with the weapons that he used to kill his people. We were in bed with him.
But it was also a million people there.
Here.
It was a million people
yes,
there.
Yes, but we participated in
day.
That.
How
we're
how
culpable
that work out
for
over
that.
Day.
What happened to those people there, we're culpable because we were in bed with Saddam Hussein. We were in bed with Osama bin Laden. And when things come back and blow up in our faces, you can't now just ignore that we already had a relationship. And I think we're having a short memory here.
The guy who pulls the trigger is the one who's guilty, not the one who made the gun. Let's go to, is it?
Mohammed? In Brooklyn.
Mohammed in Brooklyn?
The mountains coming to Mohammed. Good morning. I guess not. Maybe Mohammed's got to come to the mountain. Mohammed, are you there? We're going to move on. You have to call back. 212-868-0975. Take line three. Who's on line three? I don't see who's on line three.
Can I speak with you now?
Excuse me?
Can I speak with you now?
Oh, Mohammed hung up and came back on three?
No, yes.
Hey,
may
Mohammed.
I speak with you now?
Yes. Yes.
All right, now what the situation is, and I heard the other gentleman talking, and I understand precisely what's going on from every view that's been spoken, but I want to say clearly, without a shadow of a doubt, Imam W.D. Muhammad has a divine, perfect solution for the human being across the board, not just the African American. And I mean that as the truth has ever been spoken, that is the truth.
Now, what is that solution?
Next time you have what he just spoke this morning was enough for us to get clarity. If you continue to study his teaching since he came in, you will be past clear for a wondrous life. Jewish, Christian, Muslim, every human being. And that is the truth without a shadow of a doubt. God bless.
The truth. And on that note, 847.
Let's go to Elaine in Manhattan. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning, Professor Karen Hunter, and good morning, Rabbi Shea.
How are you,
Hi, Elaine?
Hi. I just want to say the teaching that Elijah Muhammad was teaching us was to have respect for ourselves and to know the power of God, Allah, God, Jehovah. And he said, when he used the term, people say he's a white devil, he was talking about the mentality of people, not about a color, the evil thinking of people. Can you hear me?
Yes.
And his teachings were very wise, very wise. He was not a racist. He was not concerned about, he was telling people of color to go for self, learn independence. Same as Marcus Garvey, but he had a spiritual aspect. That's what the world needs to rely on. The power we want, money or no money. You got the power of the force who gave us life to give us the power to get the things we want. People have to realize that it's not about religion per se. It's about the power of spiritual godliness in their heart, in their soul.
I like the way.
And Elijah was teaching the same thing.